Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Backstage Chicago. I'm Lisa Fielding, and today we're inside the beautiful Lyric Opera. And we're truly going backstage with one of the few women literally calling the shots behind the scenes.
How are we doing on places, guys?
Rachel Tobias has been making the magic behind the scenes for the Lyric Opera for 20 years.
Lights 1.5 go and stand by on the curtain.
Tobias quickly moved up the ranks. She served as stage manager for the last 10 years and was recently promoted to production stage manager. Take me back to how you got involved in theater, on stage, behind the stage. Like, what were your choices when you were young? Were you always creative? Did you always know you wanted to be in live performance kind of thing?
Well, I think with most musicians, and it's interesting because one thing I love about my job is that I talk with everybody, and I love to hear people's stories about how they got started and how they found, if they started in musical theater, how they found their way to opera. But a lot of musicians, they start in the church. And my dad was a pastor, and my brother was an organist, and I sang in the church choir. And that's kind of how a lot of musicians get started. And then when I was little, I played the guitar, and I played the piano, and I played the violin. So music was always a very integral part of my family. So, and then when I got into high school, I loved musical theater, and that was my first love. And then I went to a performing arts high school here in the city, and that kind of even launched me even further. That's when I found opera, my junior year of high school, and then I fell in love with opera, of course. And then I went into college, and I was a pianist and a vocalist in college. But my senior year of college, I realized that it wasn't quite what I wanted to do, because it's hard to be a performer. And the lifestyle and the always having to be on, and just it's just the needing to be perfect all the time. It was just a lifestyle that I couldn't lead myself. I didn't want to travel that much. So I'm fine traveling a little bit, but I wanted a home base. And then when I graduated from college, I worked at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra for a year or two and kind of like learned the admin roles there, realized that wasn't quite a great fit. And then I got connected here at the opera, and that was, 20 years ago.
You could call her the ultimate multitasker.
Like Thor and TV's up.
She calls herself the traffic controller of every stage production.
So take me through the process of a show that comes on board here. How do you begin? Take me from the beginning to the end.
Well, it's interesting because right now, yesterday was our final performance of the season. We had Magic Victrola, which was our kiddie show. Fabulous, fabulous. I mean, just having like 3,000 kids in the audience is just amazing. But so what we're doing now is that we're starting to have design presentations for next season. So we had a Carmen design presentation last week, and where the director comes in and we have schedule meetings and we talk about chorus numbers and what the rehearsal schedule looks like. Then she talks about how, because it's a remount, so we have the set, and then she talks about modifications that she wants to make to the set. And then right now we're kind of starting to put together like rehearsal schedules. We're starting to put together like implement those changes that she wants to do with a set. So when she comes back in the fall, then we're ready to rehearse. We already have the changes in the props that she wants to do, the different costumes that she wants to make, and yeah. So that's kind of that's the pre-process. But then of course it's a totally different process once we actually start rehearsals, because then we have the set in the room and we organize with the crew to make sure that all the props are there, and we have rehearsal costumes for everyone. And then we work with the director to kind of set up, because a lot of time, the biggest part about putting on an opera is chorus hours, because the chorus plays a very big role, like let's say in Carmen. I mean, they're in all throughout Carmen, and making sure that they are well rehearsed, and just making sure that everybody's safe and all those great things.
You have an amazing role once the show happens. Kind of describe what you do behind the scenes that we don't see as the audience.
Oh, it's actually, you know, I have to say my favorite part about my job, I love the rehearsal process. Once we get to performances, it's like everything's already figured out and it's like it's fine, it's great, and I love it for the audience, but I love the rehearsal process and kind of figuring things out. And it's like a giant, like I put together puzzles with my grandma when I was really little, and I think that really plays an important role of what I do here, because productions are just a giant puzzle and putting things together and making sure that you know how the set has to move, and then you have to put the people in the set of, like, how do the people then move with a set, and then how do all the props move with a set. So everything is just, you have to layer everything up of how are we going to make this work for every single department and what they have to do and what they have to implement. So part of my job is that when I'm in rehearsal, that I take copious amounts of notes, that every single night I give out notes to all the departments and they all roll their eyes and they're like, all right, yeah, I got to do this by tomorrow. But it's just making sure that, you know, that props are getting their notes and wardrobe is getting their notes, and then also that all the notes are kind of happening at the same time. So once we actually get to the first rehearsal on stage, everything is where it needs to be in order for all those layers to start happening with the cast and with the costumes and with the props and with lighting and all of that.
During the actual show, you do cues. Mm-hmm. Tell us, explain what that means and what you do with that.
Oh, sure. So it's kind of like think of a show as like starting a train, like an Amtrak train. Is that it's very slow to get started. So, you know, I start calling cues at half hour, and that's usually when the audience is in the house. So at half hour, you know, we're checking all the props and we're, you know, in our first light cue. And then at 15 minutes, then we start 15 minutes, that's what everyone's kind of starting to get into their costume and all that. And then by 10 minutes, you know, then we start calling cast to stage. We start calling all of our pre-shows. We start calling the announcements and house to half, house out, conductor special up and out. We send the maestro in, and then on the downbeat, then we just go into the show. So my job as a stage manager is that I have follow spot cues and deck cues, light cues. I call places like people to the stage. You know, I give warnings on like costume changes and wig changes. And so it's just I'm constantly talking.
Go. Lights 105 and flash 4. Go. Warning flashes 5 through 8 and lights 109. Less fog, please.
You had a busy fall. You had just finished Macbeth, and then you started with The Magic Flute, which you had mentioned was one of your most challenging shows. Tell me a little bit about The Magic Flute and why it was so different for you and how you made it through.
So The Magic Flute was totally different. As a stage manager, especially in opera, and theater's a little bit different, but in opera, that the stage manager's backstage. So the council is downright, and that's usually where I stand when I call Macbeth, when I call Tosca and The Magic Victrola, I stand downright. And I'm also like in the hub of everything that's happening backstage. But for The Magic Flute, because there were, I don't even remember how many projection issues there were, but I was actually out in the house. We have a viewing booth in the house left, and I was back there calling all the cues. And it was weird because there was a big separation that I'm not used to between backstage and what I was doing, and that made me very, very uncomfortable. But, you know, I just had to focus. But I was so busy calling all the projection cues, and, you know, it was like one cue after another, after another, after another. And a lot of times I wasn't able to look up at the stage. It was everything was very, very musical. And then there were times when I had to, like, look up at the stage because, like a character was kicking a spider out of the way or punching a heart out of the way. And those cues have to be executed precisely, or it just looks weird. It just looks off, like there's like someone made a mistake, and of course that's the last thing that we want.
So what made The Magic Flute so different was you had projections and you had harnesses and you really had a lot of different things in this production. Kind of tell me a little bit about why it was so different and so many different things that you had to deal with that you normally don't.
Oh, sure. So with Magic Flute is that usually in an opera you have a set and you have props and you have and singers are able to work off their props, they're able to work off their colleagues. But for Magic Flute is that it was just one white wall, and then there were two different levels. And then the singers were, they had harnesses, and they had these little like half moon like turnouts from this wall. So they're harnessed in, they have no props, they can't really interact with their colleagues, and they also can't see what's going on stage because you're on a white wall and the projections are really the performance. It's how the projections and how these singers interact with the projections. So it was very difficult for them because usually it's, you know, you're like, okay, well, you sing this note and then you cross down right and then you pick up this prop. But for Magic Flute, it wasn't like that at all. It was just like you have to stand there and imagine that there's a spider coming from down from, you know, above your head, and then you have to punch it on the third beat, and that's when the projection happens. And it was a very different way of rehearsing.
Tell me about your cue book. You've often called it your Bible, mm-hmm. and you had showed it to me at one point, and how many cues you have in a normal show, and then Magic Flute, you had a few more hundred, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, typically, for a typical opera, there might be, I don't know, 300 cues, 200 to 300 cues. I mean, and then for Magic Flute, I wish I could remember. It's funny how, like, you remember these things so well when you're doing them. I think they were close to, like, 800 cues or mm-hmm. something like that. And also the opera's only about 2 hours and 15 minutes. So it was really a quick succession of cues, one right after the other.
And why do you call it your Bible?
Well, it's what I have to live by. I mean, if I lost it or if I misplaced it, there wouldn't be a show. There just wouldn't. So, like, I never take the score home. It never leaves the building because if I get hit by a bus, that score cannot. That score has to exist somewhere so someone else can come in and take over.
Hey, Bill, are you down right by chance? Awesome. Thank you.
Tell me what it takes to put together a show. How many people kind of under your direction on any given night?
Not necessarily under my direction, but there's just a ton of people mm-hmm. that work backstage. And it's part of you know, everyone says that theater is magical, and I have to say it really is because you have a couple hundred people that are working their hardest at the exact same time to make this piece work. And to me, that's kind of what's magical, is that everybody has their own role, everybody's doing their own job, and everything has to be succinct with everybody else is doing. And that's kind of what's magical between, you know, the 25 people in wardrobe to the 25 people in the makeup department, wig and makeup department, to the 45 guys that are working on the deck on the crew, to the two people that are up in upholstery, to the five-member production staff. Then you have your lighting and you have your follow spots. I mean, it is a couple hundred people before you even get to the performers on stage. And we're all doing it at the same time to create this piece.
And you work with something I consider in television like a technical director. Your cues go to someone else, correct? And they make the moves. How does that work? You work with a team behind the scenes too.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think what I mentioned before is that, you know, I have a headset and I'm connected to many different people, is that I'm connected to, like, let's just use yesterday as an example. Okay. So Magic Victrola, I had three follow spots. So I had three follow spots. I have an assistant lighting designer. The lighting designer was also actually in the viewing, in the lighting booth, so he was listening as well. And then I have the master flyman. I have a, I'm my voice is being, I have the trap operator that's in the trap. My voice is on a biscuit. So, like, everybody, so a biscuit is basically, it's a speaker, but we call it a biscuit, okay. but it's on the rail. So whatever I'm saying is being broadcast stage right. So, like, all the crew can hear all the cues that are being given. So, you know, there's a lot. And then also given the assistant director and the two assistant stage mm-hmm. managers are on the piece. So I think I'm connected to about 10 to 15 people, depending upon the complexity of the show.
This is a 30-minute intermission on stage. 30 minutes, please. Good half, you guys. 30 minutes.
And as one of the few women stage managers in the business, she realizes she's a role model in a male-dominated industry. She says since she started, there's been a revolution for females backstage.
You know, Lisa, when I started, you know, 20 years ago, there were very few. Most of the production stage manager roles all had men in them, you know, and the women were like the assistant stage managers. But there has been an evolution, like, so, and now that maybe like 10 years ago, you know, then all of a sudden that women started to move up, and you know, and we're starting to fill these roles, and it's exciting. I mean, it is still very weird because it's still a very male-dominated, in the technical part of theater, it's still very male-dominated. So there are times when I'm sitting in, not necessarily a scheduling meeting, but like when I'm sitting in other like technical meetings, I look around the table and I'm like, there's like two women in a room full of like 15 men. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't find it weird because it is fundamentally, it's weird, but it's, you know, I just treat everybody equally. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, like, if you're the head of the company or if you're, you know, the janitor. Like, everybody gets treated the mm-hmm. same. I talk to everybody the same. And I think that's just how you kind of have to operate. So I try not to let that get in my head, and I just kind of go about my business and do my job. And
after 20 years, though, you're a role model, and you have pioneered this kind of in this industry for other women who might be interested in this kind of thing. What do you say to young women who might want to be in theater but behind the scenes and, you know, ascend to a position like you have?
Well, I think it's imperative that we support each other. It's one of my biggest pet peeves when I see women kind of tearing each other down. We are supposed to support each other. And it doesn't matter if you are brand new in the business or if you're a seasoned veteran, we all need to support each other because that's how we're going to move our industry forward. That's how we are all going to have a role and have a voice and have a say in how things get run.
How do you feel when you're actually doing the show and maybe when it's over? Do you have like an adrenaline rush? And how does it feel to have an accomplishment? One show ran flawlessly or pretty flawlessly to the point that the audience didn't notice anything. How does that feel, you know, as you go through the show and then when the curtain goes down?
It's funny because I get nervous afterwards. Like when I'm in the show, I'm not nervous at all. Like, but after the show ends, if the show ends at 10:30, like I'm not in bed until like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning because my adrenaline is very. Yeah. It's like yeah, I'm ramped up. Like my that's my adrenaline afterwards.
Go.
I had a unique experience during Tosca. During the shift between Act One and Act Two, the curtain went out and the audience was allowed to watch the scene change. Mm. So myself and Benji McCormick, who's one of the assistant technical directors, we went out and we narrated the scene shift. And of course, being backstage, and also like right here, what we're doing right now, this is not what I do. Like, I'm not used to being interviewed or being seen. Like, I'm backstage. I'm used to not being seen. But it was nerve-wracking to go out on stage and having to explain what the audience was seeing. And we did this every single Tosca performance. And it was weird because I didn't get nervous until after that curtain went down. It's like, then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, what did I just do? What did I just say? Did I say anything dumb? Like, it was, yeah, it's all after.
Surprise, surprise!
Well, I think people like to see and hear from folks like you because they see what's on stage, but they have no idea what it takes behind the scenes. And I love things behind the scenes. I think as much as you felt nervous telling people what you do, I think people love to know how it's all done and are amazed that you do what you do under such pressure. You're under pressure, you know, in a couple hours. Do you find a lot of people react with fascination when you tell them what you do and what it takes?
I think so, yeah. I mean, whenever I, like for family get-togethers, whenever my aunts and my uncles always ask me, like, okay, well, what show did you work on and what, you know, interesting, that's the first thing that they ask when they see me is like, okay, tell me a story. Like what happened at the opera this season? And I would tell the stories and their eyes would just get big and they're like, how did you deal with that? How do you, and it's like, well, it's not just me dealing with it. It's like everybody's dealing with it. It's like, it's, once again, it all goes back to your crew. It all goes back to the people that are working around you. And it's like, it's not a solo, I mean, putting on opera is not a solo sport. So it is a 100% participation.
And now you've finished your first return season. How does that feel? We made it.
It was just exhilarating because, you know, we're also so connected to other companies, and other companies, you know, had to shut down, mm-hmm. you know, for various reasons, or they weren't able to open up. So we're one of the few companies that we were actually able to have our entire season. So it was a sense of accomplishment for everybody. And we're looking forward to next season because next season is going to be, you know, it's going to be bigger. We're going to have more shows. We're really looking forward to it.
After a rough few years for the live performance industry, she and the cast and crew at Lyric are looking forward to another season that kicks off in the fall.
So we open with Ernani, mm-hmm. and then Fiddler on the Roof, Count O'Ree, Hansel and Gretel, mm-hmm. Don Carlos, Factotum, Proximity, Carmen, and then a West Side Story at the end of the season.
And can we have House and Works, please? 30 minutes, guys.
Now, with more than 100 shows under her belt, she enters her 21st season with a new role and a new passion. A pioneer behind the scenes, calling the shots and paving the way for women everywhere.
Lights 260 and TV's out. Go. House curtain and lights 262.
I still love what I do, and I'm still, you know, pushing forward. And now, as with this new role, I'm really hoping to kind of, I don't know. I'm just looking forward to getting started with it, and I'm looking forward to, you know, boosting morale and let's start making art again. And yeah.
House and curtain warmers up. Go. All right, thanks, you guys. Great show. Rachel's off.
Remember, you can listen to Backstage Chicago on the Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.